So you want me to start then?
I do want you to start, Jimmy, yes.
Hello and welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast, episode 32. My name is Jimmy.
My name is Jazza, and we have a guest this week.
We do indeed. Nick.
Hi. Yes, I'm Nick.
You can talk now.
Great. Lovely. Yeah. I have authority to speak.
Yeah.
I'm Nick. I'm your guest this week.
Very good. Well done at introducing
you. Might know me from your Facebook page.
Yeah. Because I apparently stalk you all the time.
Yeah.
Do you want to introduce yourself briefly? What do you do?
Who are you?
Yeah.
So, not the guy who hangs outside your flat all the time.
No, clearly. You're making yourself sound quite creepy, I'll be honest.
Yeah.
But this is completely your decision. You've got control right now.
So, my name is Nick Matsey. I work for BT at the moment. So I was an army officer for 9 years. And I left in 2014 in July and came to work in London. And I am very interested in politics. I do a bit of writing. I have an old Huffington Post blog page. I am a conservative, which goes to show that I'm a down-to-earth, pragmatic person.
You are the first Tory that we've had on, haven't we?
I mean, it's still not a real Tory, you know.
Jabbering
fruitcake racists that make up the bulk of the party's voting.
Now, Jimmy, you're being very unfair and you're clearly goading him.
Clearly, no, it's not fair because it's London, so I'm probably about the only Tory here.
There's still more
than the Lib Dems we have in London, so that's...
No, let's not talk about the Lib Dems, though. So, welcome to the Right Dishonourable podcast, everybody, by the way.
Yes.
We talk about politics, social issues and current events weekly in 15-minute segments over a 45 to 50-minute podcast.
It's a good elevator pitch.
Thank you. Cheers. I've been working on that for 32 episodes and I think I've finally got
really
it down.
Yeah,
thank you.
And that's the best you've got so far.
It is. I don't know what you're trying to imply in terms of the quality of my elevator
pitch. Amazing.
Thank you. Cheers.
Maybe we should say what we're going to talk about this week.
So this week we're going to be talking about the fact that Google have been really good and have paid all of the tax that they owe. Isn't that right?
Lovely.
Yeah.
That was sarcasm for anybody not noticing it in the tone of my voice. George Osborne wants us to believe that 0.04% tax is actually okay for a corporation like Google to pay.
It was £130
million. £130
million,
and they have profits of £7 billion in the UK.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Yeah, so something like that. Although, you know what I'm like, and I've probably gotten the stat wrong by a factor of 10.
I thought it was $7 billion US dollars across the globe, but I don't think they break it down country by country.
For deliberate reasons.
I think there's more than $7
billion. We'll look that up in the break when the music comes on. secondly, we get to talk about one of my favourite topics. It's the soap opera that is the primaries for the US presidential elections. Iowa is on Monday, whatever day it is that you are listening to this. For us, it's tomorrow. And this is the first time that people, despite months and months of speculation and debates and totes dance because Trump isn't he lols, we are going to have people actually go to vote for people for the first time. And so maybe we'll see Trump collapse, maybe we'll see Bernie surge. It's all very exciting and I do like it. And then the third thing that we're going to talk about, do you want to...
I'll talk about it.
Yeah, yeah.
David Cameron wrote a letter in the Times this morning talking about social inequalities and how angry he is actually that we're not getting more black and other
black Asian minority,
black Asian minorities,
BAME. You're welcome.
Men and women into his old university in Oxford, he talks about some social inequalities that are changing and what he would like to see people do more about. And he had a very good letter in the Times this morning, and I have strong feelings about this subject, and I disagree a little bit with some of what he says, because I don't...
Disagreeing with your leader, Nick, rebel without a cause.
I don't disagree. This is why you don't think I'm a proper Tory. I don't disagree with what he says. I disagree with what he doesn't say. Right.
Oh my God.
Well,
if that's not a cliffhanger, I don't know what is. We are going to go into our first topic now after a little bit of tinkly music. Good. Have come under fire, and the Chancellor, George Osborne, have come under fire this week because at the beginning of the week, George came to the public and was like, guys, it's all good. either, you know how Google don't really pay very much tax, and we're getting a load of flack for that because we're not really chasing them to get tax. Mm. I've got them to pay like £130 million, so it's all good now. Like, haven't I done really well? And then everybody was like, oh, actually, and I'm guilty of this. I did tweet saying that this was something that I thought was positive. And then people did some sums and realised that the amount of money that Google were paying in tax compared to their sales and profits in the UK was quite small.
Well, I think the Italians have squeezed out that much for 1 year.
Do you think? Really?
Yeah, that was in the news very recently. The Italians have said, we'll have that for 1 year, thanks very much.
Yeah, cheers, guys. Because this was meant to be, like, back payment for several years, right?
Yeah, 2005 to 2000.
Yeah, which is, like, absolutely insane.
They have a mafia in there that they can sort out for them, don't they? Whereas, you know...
The Italians, yeah.
So that's what we lack.
Yeah, we have a decent mafia.
Yeah, you know what? I feel like there's a niche there that needs to be filled. But basically, this has... kind of, and also in the week that people have been submitting their tax returns, this is kind of smacked as like...
You know what? Not well timed.
No, yeah, not very well timed. And we've actually had a really interesting response to this where we've seen McDonnell, who is the shadow John McDonnell, the shadow chancellor, release his tax return showing how much money he's made and how much tax he's made. Looks like everything's in order there. Very good, Mr. McDonnell. And also we've had people suggesting that this isn't fair. Even from the Tory benches, we've seen Nigel Lawson. If you don't know who he is, he's Nigella Lawson's dad.
He's done other things as well.
That's his main, like, identifier. Okay. Really. Like, he's got a famous, voluptuous daughter who cooks. And he said that this, quite frankly, this is ridiculous that Google is paying such low tax. We should probably start taxing sales rather than profits because it's too easy to manipulate profits tax because people just send
everything to the media. It's worth mentioning at this stage as well that out of the top 10 FTSE listed companies in Britain, six of them have paid no corporation tax or such a small amount that it doesn't really count.
Yeah.
I think because of BP was one and
Shell was another.
Was another one, and one of the pharmaceutical companies as well. So what we should say about that money that Google's paid, it's a good start. Right, it's a good start, right?
I would argue it's a shit start.
I would say £130 million in our pockets is better than nothing to start.
Right, okay.
A start there.
Yeah, but this wasn't meant to be a start. This was meant to be George Osborne trying to wash his hands of the whole thing and be like, guys, I've done it, it's fine.
I agree. So what we are pointing out here is that there's a fundamental global problem with corporation tax and big businesses, right? Straight away, there is not a universal approach in the European Union or around the World Trade Organization, and we are allowing these big companies to get away with not paying their dues. Right?
As a Tory, are you disappointed as a conservative?
What's the difference between a Tory?
Well, a Tory to me feels a little bit like. Tory, you know, you're a horrible person.
Do you feel like you're being attacked, you poor little thing? I'm so sorry. How do you feel as a member of George Osborne's party when he's essentially trying to dupe the population, right? He was hoping that people would think, he's gotten Google to actually pay some tax, but he's trying to be a bit sly here, right?
I don't think he's trying to be sly. I think what he is trying to do is he's trying to fight an organisation without the proper legislation and changes to tax rules in Britain and with a global agreement that would mean that we get the money out of these companies the proper way. And corporation tax, unfortunately, is a dying tax.
Do you think that George Osborne wants to be able to do that by fixing corporation tax?
I think he'd like to. I didn't answer your question properly when I said about that because I went off the subject.
He doesn't strike me as a massively pro-tax person in general.
So he's an ideologist, right? This is what you have to remember about George Osborne. It's very similar with the tax credit cuts and everything else. George Osborne is a conservative ideologist about low tax and keeping it out and generating money through other ways.
Okay.
And what's the pro-business, he will keep cutting the corporation tax here. So I don't think he's pro-tax. He's a basic ideologist when it comes to his approach to politics. He wants to keep corporation tax low And I think he's done this to try and get more businesses to come here. He's trying to stay on Google's good side.
Do you think he's justifiable we were talking about this earlier, I'm not just jumping on here. But
as a spokesman for the Tory party.
Yeah, sorry, was that a Freudian slip? Are you in fact a Tory or not? Conservative MEPs have been lobbying for taking Bermuda off of the blacklist from the EU of where companies functioning in the EU can put their tax. What do you, like, how
well,
do you justify
the MEPs
that,
to do
it,
because nobody cares about the MEPs, do they? So the MEPs can go and do stuff, people don't follow what they're doing.
Yeah, but this is such an unpopular thing in the wider, in the UK with voters, right?
Yeah, I agree with you. The thing is we need these companies to pay tax. Paying tax is a good thing. I pay my taxes, you pay your taxes. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people pay their taxes.
A lot of people don't, apparently.
But it's really
unfair who doesn't pay taxes. And it's not fair that people like us earning a fair wage pay our taxes, but these massive businesses who make billions and billions and billions, it was about $66 billion in revenue and something like how much in profit we figured out?
It was about $8 billion in profit,
You know, you're making that much money and you're paying £130 million in, corporation tax over 10 years. It's not fair.
I think there's something interesting here in terms of the UK's relationship to the EU as well. Because we saw the SNP give a letter to the European Commission that was basically saying, hey, guys, Google aren't really paying taxes in the UK. Can you sort this out for us, mate? And we've also kind of seen, so a big part of like the anti-EU part of the Conservative Party basically says that it takes away sovereignty from like the government, right? Mm. And the last word should be from the UK government. Mm. However, when the government is arguably not doing enough to be able to protect the interests of its population, like you could say now in terms of like big corporations paying tax, then the EU comes into play and blacklists places like Bermuda. Mm-hmm. If it weren't for the EU, people would still be unaware of that and would still be able to...
Well, the power of the EU to make an agreement with Google is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. You know, if the EU turned around and said, you will pay the taxes, these are the rules, you can't come and do business here unless you pay up.
Yeah.
Properly.
Do you think that this is kind of like an angle that could potentially work for the Remain campaign in the future? Or is it... Do people get really bored talking about tax?
I don't even know that the EU is structurally has the ability to do what you just suggested. I mean, in theory, it could do it, but it's just so fractured as a political body that I don't think it would be able to get its shit together.
They seem to be pretty serious about getting companies like Google and Facebook and stuff
talk about it, but it would be very difficult. I think the EU could do it. If they decided to do it, they really could. But tax is boring. People don't understand. It's very, very complicated. Yeah. I don't understand it fully. It took me ages to figure out the double Irish and how they managed to do it that way. These companies employ extremely clever accountants.
What is the double Irish?
Now, don't make me explain it to you. So,
just for
the no, because
it's a way of organising your taxes so that you pay tax twice in Ireland, which has very low corporation tax and. They're actually doing away.
Which is why
there has been pressure from the EU on the Irish government to actually eliminate that.
Yeah, you can't.
So they have achieved that, to be fair to them.
Yeah, you can't get away with stuff like that now.
Yeah, but the EU has had a big problem with companies not wanting to play ball, and companies like Google and Facebook. I should say that I work for Facebook, but you guys can lay into them as much as you like. Where they've essentially sent the intern to go and give testimony to the EU when it comes to like tax
fees. So I think that's a major.
I think it's hilarious.
I think it's a major issue actually, right? So that when Zuckerberg was called forward to talk to MPs in Britain, he didn't even respond. Let alone turn up. You know, no doubt he tried to turn up in a pair of jeans and a t-shirt if he did. And so that's not allowed in Parliament.
Classic Zuck.
And maybe you can hang out with Jeremy Corbyn sometime. And you know,
I'm not sure. I'm just going to put this out there. I'm not sure Mark Zuckerberg is going to be Corbyn's biggest friend.
No, but they dress similar, right? You know, they don't take things serious. Anyway, so the point being, there is these organisations which are global, which reach people digitally, not necessarily through a physical embodiment of a product of some kind, do not necessarily take international organisations seriously or governments seriously, and they sometimes think they're above the law with it. And actually.
And those are attitudes that you see throughout Silicon Valley, right?
Absolutely, yeah. And other large institutions, I mean, even the, you know, BP, Shell, you know, the oil and gas industries. If they're global like this, it's very easy to get away with things because you can have your ownership anywhere, not necessarily in one state.
Yeah.
That's going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. Ownership through globalization is going to grow and grow and grow. So Britain really, really needs to grip this issue. And the deal that George Osborne has done with Google is the wrong deal because it sets the wrong precedent.
But you think it's a good start?
I think it's better than no money at all.
Right.
It's okay. Possible that Osborne actually just isn't really able to get a better deal. Ask it.
That's so embarrassing, isn't it?
It's embarrassing, but you know, you're
the Italians have done it.
Yeah, that's true.
And if the Italians could do it, you know, come on.
Yeah,
you know.
can we talk about the dead cat?
Yeah, okay. So explain what the dead cat is in this context.
So I just love the terminology. Lyndon Crosby, who was the campaign... He's an Australian, now Lord of...
Now he's Sir. He's Sir.
He's now Sir. So sorry.
Properly, Chaz.
Rightly so. So he should. When he gets an election.
He was the election manager, the campaign manager for the Conservative Party in the run-up to the May election in 2015. And he has a terminology where if you want the public and the media to focus on something separate from something quite embarrassing, like, for example, Google not paying enough tax, you throw a proverbial dead cat on the table to make everybody talk about the dead cat. Now, the dead cat that has been... it's been suggested that this has been a dead cat play by Cameron at Prime Minister's Questions, where he said that Jeremy Corbyn had been hanging out with a bunch of migrants, which... arguably could be seen as dehumanising people who have been fleeing their homes. But, you know, displaced by war, oh, lols.
I mean, the thing is that, you know, people like you always take the bait when somebody says
completely slightly on PC. No,
but
that's the thing, it worked.
It worked
because,
very well.
Because then...
So if a bunch of migrants... What's the plural for a group of migrants, then?
Migrants?
A group of migrants.
Yeah.
A gaggle? A group of migrants. Like, they are people, primarily, and this... And calling them a bunch of migrants and calling migrants
so, like,
a swarm,
it's an
which is what Cameron...
It's an improvement
it's
on Swarm.
It's an improvement on Swarm, which, to be fair, was a very low place to start from.
I think this stuff is just so trivial, it's not even really worth noticing. You should just ignore it and move on. It doesn't mean anything.
So, actually, Jazz has said something really important there, which I do agree with. And he talked about the language of dehumanising, and I totally agree with what you're saying. Mm-hmm. The language of dehumanising is extremely dangerous, mm-hmm. And we should be much, much more careful not to use that language, because it does dehumanise. I think you're right, absolutely.
But,
whatever. But I did love the picture someone took of the Daily Mail could just, you know, F off. Did you see that?
No.
Great. With some migrant or refugee put there. But we have to be very careful with that dehumanising language. It's very powerful. We don't realise it, and this stuff does carry through. Philip Zimbardo did his experiment on the Stanford Prison Experiment. You remember that one?
Sure, yeah.
If you haven't Googled it, Google Stanford Prison Experiment and watch Philip Zimbardo's stuff on TED Talk. It's amazing. But dehumanising is one of the things, of three things that you can do to make people go and do stuff you wouldn't normally do in a negative environment,
yeah.
Which is torturing and abusing and other activities.
But the thing is, it's not... People were saying that this was a really clumsy play by Cameron, but it's actually quite clever because
it would be very odd for Cameron to say something like that by mistake.
But the thing is, it's very clever because 75% of the UK population think that we shouldn't take anybody from the Calais camps. And, we're lefty liberals, or... Well, I'm not a lefty liberal, but wishy-washy, oh, my God, why can't we all hug and get on, liberals like me, get really annoyed about this. But the fact is, the majority of the population couldn't care less about the people in Calais.
I don't much care about the people in Calais. They're already in France.
You twat.
They're okay.
Actually, I'm glad you said that, because do you remember that photo of that boy on the beach in Greece?
Yeah.
And everyone was up in arms, and they're going, oh, the poor boy, oh, we'll have to do something about it. And then the next day, there was about a flood of photos of other people who drowned and died, mm-hmm. and nobody cared.
No, but that's just how people, interact with media, right? It takes for one thing to be held up like that. Anyway, we talked a very long time about this topic. We somehow got on to the migrant crisis.
So what was our final answer on Google Tax?
They should pay more tax.
They should probably pay more, but it's a problem. It's going to take probably decades to solve.
So our answer is yes, they should pay more, but it's complicated.
Toys are evil.
On Monday, the Americans will finally be voting for the first time in the primaries for the presidential candidates. On the Republican side, we still have Donald Trump, Jazz's favourite.
Oh, he's my personal fave. My problematic fave.
Not just Jazz's favourite as well. When we were having a chat after, these two both, they were like, Trump.
I do have a picture of Trump in my bathroom for certain reasons.
I can confirm. Ted Cruz is also the second favourite in the Republican camp. Got Marco Rubio still in there. Jeb Bush somehow still lived there.
It's like a list of crazy people, isn't it?
You know, Jeb Bush is one of the more sane ones, which is maybe
that
suggestive.
That goes to show.
We'll talk about this later on, because we had the last Republican debate a couple of days ago.
Yes.
And Trump boycotted it because he doesn't like Megyn Kelly from Fox News very much, and she was moderating.
But more on that later. On the Democratic side, we just have Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders.
And Martin O'Malley.
And that guy.
Who?
Yeah.
Martin O'Malley, he's hot.
So
there's pictures of him topless, and he has pecs.
Okay, so if we were voting for the hot candidate, Martin O'Malley...
Martin O'Malley, hands down.
Guys, who do you think...
is the hottest candidate.
Yeah.
Who do you think is going to win on the respective Republican and Democratic side?
Trump's going to win the Iowa.
Trump's going to win Iowa.
And terrifyingly, I think it's going to be a bit of a lead.
So, you know what? I reckon all bets are off until people actually start voting.
You can't make a prediction saying we don't know until the final result comes out.
But the thing is, we don't, because I still have a sliver of faith in the American public that they won't actually tick a box that has Trump in it. When it comes down to it, I don't think that they will make that much of a decision.
I think you're
overestimating
the American public.
And so I think he will win, but I don't think he's going to win by a landslide. There's people suggesting that Marco Rubio is surging at the moment in Iowa. Ted Cruz is currently on the way down, but probably to the benefit of Marco Rubio. So I don't think that Trump will necessarily win by the landslide that people are assuming and what is implied by the polls. I think that we should take every poll at the moment with a pinch of salt.
So on the Democratic side, what are we thinking at the moment? Are we thinking
Clinton? Interesting, isn't it?
I think Clinton is going to win by like a hair, but... I have no idea.
And then Bernie Sanders will win New Hampshire. What people are suggesting.
New Hampshire's in a fortnight or something, right? Okay.
But the thing is, to talk about Hillary, we just had a conclusive statement that said that her use of her private emails, she did use top secret. She did use that email to email about top secret things.
She used a private email server to store emails that contained top secret information and that was not held to the rigorous security standards of the American government servers.
Yes. You've explained that a lot better.
The only way you should find out secret stuff from America is via WikiLeaks. Because you've got to control these things.
So that's kind of the thing that's been bringing her down, but isn't there also a sense that she's actually kind of a duff candidate as well?
Why do you think she's a duff candidate? She's a
liar. She has told some lies. She talked about that. I mean, the best one, my favourite one is, yeah, we landed under fire in Bosnia. And you watch the video of her chat away and having a... It astounds me that she is still able to be in this process and say these things. The thing is, I think she's quite a clever person and a good candidate.
She's very clever, yeah.
There are personality issues there. It worries me.
No, but you want somebody who's going to be a good president, right? And I think of all the candidates, she is the most qualified on either side of the political aisle, right? She's the most qualified. I think she would probably be, diplomatically speaking, the best president. But for whatever reason, people seem intent on dragging her down because people don't like establishment figures, and she is the.
It's not the establishment thing.
I think the establishment thing is huge.
Why some people dislike her, but the private email service thing is a big deal. The fact she lied about it for so long is a big deal. Her connection with, you know, the covering up sexual allegations against Bill Clinton is also a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that a significant part of her campaign seems to be just, I'm a woman. is very unimpressive.
I don't think
well.
It is as much as it was in 2008. I genuinely think that she has a much stronger campaign, and she's campaigning on, like, she is very good at engaging on, like, minority issues. Although she's had a rocky path with LGBT issues, that's been a big thing that she's been championing. Gun reform is a big thing that she has been campaigning on, especially because that juxtaposes her quite nicely with Bernie Sanders, who's snapping at her heels.
So Bernie Sanders is not in favour of gun restrictions, but that's largely due to... He's from Vermont.
Vermont, which has high gun usage.
So it's a local issue that he's had to just basically take on. It doesn't really fit very well with the rest of his platform.
No, exactly. But also, the thing is, I don't think that Hillary could necessarily win against Trump. I know, and people seem to assume that she would be able to easily.
I thought the polling suggested that Trump would be a weak candidate against both Sanders and...
Trump, when he goes going up against Hillary Clinton, she has just got the experience and the knowledge over the last 10, 15 years to really knock him out of there.
But I think that there's too much really easy stuff for him to be able to chuck at her. That I don't think that she'll necessarily...
He's only got this lowbrow stuff that he comes swinging around with about immigrants and talking about Muslims and terrorism.
Yeah, but that clearly resonates with people.
But anybody who's got a sense of intelligence will know the stuff he's talking about is utterly, utterly wrong.
Somebody did mention to me that... Because Trump has managed to insult women, he's managed to insult Muslims, and he's managed to insult Mexicans.
Hispanics in general.
That's about 80% of the American public, of the American voting public. Good luck.
That suggests that quite a few people that he's insulted are still planning on voting for him.
it does really, doesn't it?
It does interest me how much he attacks Hispanics instead of taking jobs.
I think he's moved on from then now, hasn't he? It's all Muslims.
It's when he talks about the great big wall he's going to build along with Mexico, and the only way to afford it would be to use the Hispanic immigrants to build it, which I think is brilliant. He's an entertaining character, certainly that's for sure. But there's a direct correlation between how much time and airspace and time on TV the candidates get, and a direct correlation with how many votes they're getting in the polls.
I mean, Trump got to host a session of Saturday Night Live, which is like prime time Saturday TV, and actually, there were a few candidates that they have the right to demand to have equal airtime and equal attention on similar broadcasters, and a couple of the candidates did decide to do that. What was really interesting, I'd love to talk about the debate a little bit, if I may. Is that okay?
Yeah, sorry, can I just say one thing?
Go.
Actually, I want to say one thing, because I don't want to change the subject slightly, and that is that out of all the spending on their campaigns, Donald Trump is one of the lowest
He is the lowest spenders, because he doesn't need to advertise.
Free media time.
So yeah,
he's actually obliged to spend.
So, I mean, but that's another thing he can turn around and say, look at the career politicians, how much they're spending. I'm part of the people and I'm representative and people want to hear me and I'm getting the free airtime.
But now he does have donors. For a very long time, he technically didn't have any donors. And he was like, I'm going to run this campaign off of my own back.
What, my own many billions of dollars?
Yeah. I mean, he's a multi-billionaire. Good for him. He inherited quite a lot of wealth, though, so take from that what you will. But he's only just started having, and being public about donors who are supporting his candidacy. And people are saying that the Republican Party are now kind of looking at the two front runners that we've had in the last few weeks, and they see Donald Trump and they see Ted Cruz, and they would rather see Donald Trump be their candidate than Ted Cruz, because Ted Cruz is frankly a nut job who the Republican Party absolutely hates.
I think I would take Cruz over Trump. If I had to pick one.
I don't think in a crazy off I could particularly choose one against the other.
So there's been a lot of suggestions that we're yet to see the rise of the establishment candidate. And at the very beginning of this race, people assumed that this was going to be Jeb Bush, right? Mm. That doesn't look like it's going to be happening. What we have seen is Marco Rubio rising, and I think that he genuinely could be a legitimate contender as people start to drop off and all of those votes from more centrist and less loco candidates start to be funneled towards somebody like Marco Rubio.
And consolidated.
Yeah.
It's certainly quite worrying, isn't it, when you look at the madness, the insanity of the candidates and how they... I mean, Trump must be a decent businessman to be able to generate that amount of money.
Yeah, but people have said that from the money that he inherited from his father, he would have been better just... investing
just investing it
in the stock exchange
rather than investing it himself.
Yeah. So actually, probably not that great at business, and has gone bankrupt like loads of times.
Yeah.
In
America, going bankrupt is not viewed as a bad thing as much as it is here. You know, you go and you have businesses, you start them four times, and they all fail, but eventually the fifth one will go. That's an American thing. You look at a lot of the big American business owners; they've done that. They've gone bankrupt.
Great,
before.
Good for him.
You wanted to talk about the Fox debate.
And it was really interesting because when you watched it, because Trump boycotted it, when you watched it, you saw kind of like a parallel universe where Trump never ran for president. And people like Jeb Bush looked more comfortable, less riled up by the fact that there was an absolutely crazy candidate out there who has been attacking him personally ever since the two of them shared a stage, quite frankly.
You saw
somebody like Ted Cruz, who looks reasonably normal when you put him up against and you put him next to somebody like Donald Trump. Actually, when it's just him and the rest of like the career politicians, Ted Cruz seems a bit erratic. And it was very interesting to see the changing dynamic when you take out, as Megyn Kelly explained, the non-present elephant in the room, and you put him on another channel.
Who still scored quite well in Who Won the
Debate. Yeah, in all of, like, the Who Won the Debate, on stuff like Breitbart and all of, like, those kinds of websites that have no kind of actual data behind the polls that they run, Trump still managed to win the debate despite the fact that he wasn't at the debate.
Yeah, I think that's
which kind of sums up the whole kind
it
of
says, says a lot about the power of his movement, doesn't it? That you know, I know people might do it as a bit of a joke, but if you're following it, the Trump man, you're going to vote there anyway. But there's a lot of power behind that movement that he's managed to generate, rightly or wrongly.
He's managed to harness a great deal of anger about inequality and stagnating wages and just fears about globalisation.
There's not a ground for really generating a movement for the future at all, is it? It's very easy to sit here and be angry about, you know, well, we don't like all the refugees and everything, and we don't like ISIS, we have to stop them, and all this other stuff, and people aren't really going to...
He does do that quite a lot.
If you don't have an offer for what you're going to do next, paint a picture, create a vision, and how you're going to change things.
Yeah, but that hasn't restricted him up until now, right? He has no policies. He's just equally annoyed as the people who are voting.
He has the wall policy. That's a very solid policy.
quite literally a very solid policy.
I would suggest it's not a great policy.
He has the Muslim policy as well.
Yeah, the ban all Muslims. Fantastic. I cannot wait for President Trump to enter into the White House. Moving back over to the Democrats for a second, because like all other media outlets, we've become guilty of just talking about Trump.
Well, Do you think
that we, not us, obviously, because none of us are American, I believe. Do you think that there is a deficit of choice on the Democratic side? Because there is just Hillary Sanders, who is a self-described democratic socialist, and the word socialist is incredibly loaded in the USA, and then lovely old Martin.
So the two obvious candidates who didn't enter the ring were Elizabeth Warren, who's to the left of Clinton, but well to the right of Sanders, and Joe Biden.
The current vice president.
Both of whom I think would have been better candidates than Clinton, because they don't have quite the amount of baggage that she does.
Yeah.
And they would have been better candidates than Sanders because they're more to the right than he is.
I do feel very sorry for those who are voting in Democratic primaries just because they haven't had the choice they probably deserve.
Actually, I have to say, I view it the other way. I think they're in a... And the Democrats are in a better position than the Republicans, because the Republicans have so many potential candidates that they're fighting between each other.
Yeah, and it's quite difficult to see where...
So you could end up with a really weak candidate, of which only 28% of people have voted for, and they could end up being the main choice. And most Republicans might go, well, I'm not interested in this candidate, this person's crazy. And so it's going to be very, very hard for the Republican Party to generate a movement behind them for the main campaign. For the Democrats, it's going to be very easy... The Clinton and who's the other one? I've just gone from my
Bernie Sanders.
Sanders.
Martin O'Malley. Don't forget Martin.
You know, just like Clinton and Barack Obama did in 2008, they actually were able to join together to make a sensible campaign the Republicans will not be able to do that. I think they almost dislike each other more than they do the Democratic side. And it's also easy for Clinton and Sanders at the moment to argue with what the Republican message is, because it's very clear there's only a couple of them. Republicans, well, you know, they're shouting all sorts of stuff that's confusing, they're over each other. One's more bag of crazy than the other.
They have to split the debate in two every time because there's so many people.
They lose the engagement. And then, what did they say? Because I've missed it 7 minutes.
But the problem with the Democratic side is that they've only had, what, 4 or 5 debates? And they've kept it deliberately low. And they've had a load of, like, town hall meetings and things like that where there haven't been direct debates, but candidates have been in the same room and come on one after another and stuff like that. But
remember the 7-way debate we had here for the general election 2015.
I thought that was great, though.
It was the opposition debate, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it was, I thought it was a complete farce. I thought it was absolutely rubbish. But more importantly, it was missing the Northern Ireland parties. And I guarantee people, if you don't know Northern Ireland politics, it would have made that debate so interesting.
Yeah, because nobody knows about them.
Because like, you want to hear
they're crazy. They're not relevant to me.
Well, neither's Cymru and SNP, to be fair.
Yeah, the Plaid Cymru thing is fair.
So we've managed to go off topic, as always. But
one last thing before we wrap up. What do you make of the rumour that Michael Bloomberg is going to run as an independent candidate in the US?
That would be very interesting.
Well,
that would be very interesting. Oh, God, that's excited me. I hope he does.
Have you not heard this before?
No, I've never heard of that possibility.
So, sources familiar with the matter have said he's considering it, but it would be joining very late in the day.
Well, Trump said he'd run as
I don't think that
if he didn't get the Republican nomination.
Difficult for him to be able to set up, like, campaigns.
The feeling is that it might damage now. I think he might be too side, basically.
I think he might be too late to actually be on the ballot for every single
I think it's moved.
State. I think he's too late. Now,
yeah. I don't think he's too late.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, if you know. Actually, one more thing. Can we go around and
I was going to quote The Simpsons then about third party candidates in America.
Go and quote The
Simpsons. Kang and Kodos, when they're trying to take over the world, mm-hmm. and they're representing the Democratic Republican Party, because mm-hmm. they take their covers off and it's them. Mm-hmm. And someone says, I'll vote for a third-party candidate. And then Kang says, go away, throw away your votes. And everyone just votes for one of the two aliens that are going to conquer the Earth anyway, which totally represents American politics in my
completely. Can we go around the table and call the Democratic and the Republican primary in Iowa? So, Nick, go on.
Trump and Clinton. Trump by a mile, Clinton by a hair.
Jimmy?
I agree.
I reckon Trump will win, but not by the same margin as everybody thinks. I reckon Rubio is going to come second in Iowa. I'm going to say that Bernie wins.
Ooh. You're just saying that to be different.
I am.
You don't really mean it, do you?
You easily cracked under questioning that, though.
If you guys would like to wade into this debate and you have any views on the Republican primary, maybe you have already heard who's won and you are quite happy to...
Jazza edits this.
It's going to go up very soon. But you can find us on Twitter at Right Dishonor and chastise us justly there.
Rightly so.
Thank you.
So David Cameron in The Times this morning has written a letter saying...
This morning being Sunday.
Sunday, yeah. Saying that he believes there's still a problem with equality in our many institutions. And he was talking specifically about his institution he went to. Because if you don't know, David Cameron, along with 95% of British politicians, study PPE at Oxford.
I don't think that's an accurate percentage.
It's a bit of an exaggeration. It's probably actually about 40%.
It was about 50% of the cabinet went to Oxbridge. Is like an interesting...
Yeah, most of them studied PPE, which is at Oxford, which is a course mm-hmm. of 200
PPE
people.
PPE being politics, philosophy and economics. Yeah.
All the important ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like studying classics. I know. How useful is Latin and Greek? Anyway, we're going off the subject. So David Cameron wrote a letter saying that the number of our institutions are, I suppose actually they are racist, I suppose mm-hmm. is what he's implying. He mentioned the armed forces of what my background was previous, saying we have no black generals, which is true.
Yeah.
I think we have one woman general.
That's very exciting.
Major general.
Isn't it?
Or actually, no, she's a brigadier. I don't think she's a major general. But the Americans do have a female major general, I'm very sure. Mm-hmm. And then he talked about that only 5% of chief executives in FTSE 100 companies are black. And talked about a number of other things, including that the entry to Oxford last year to his college he studied at was only 27 black men or women out of 2,500 people in the intake. He then talks about the Conservative Party and other members of Parliament.
And you are a member of the Conservative Party.
I'm a member of the Conservative Party, and I did apply to be a candidate for the London Assembly, and I went to this election. I didn't get selected.
Not bitter about that at all?
Actually, it was the right choice. It was the right choice. I didn't know the area well enough. Although I am very angry about the selection process for members of Parliament at the moment. I feel it favours people from public school backgrounds and Oxbridge PPEs. But that's a different... Don't get me angry about it. And he said that now representation in Parliament is better, which is true.
Yeah.
We do have people from black, Asian backgrounds.
Yeah, but the reason that representation... So I'm thinking specifically of women, though. The reason that we jumped up the rankings in terms of representation in our political process was because of the SNP intake.
It was also Labour in terms of women.
And David Cameron did have his A list of people which he dropped in saying you will take this person to be your local candidate and then become MPs. The problem with that is you end up with people like Louise Mensch, who was a horrible, horrible person.
Yeah, who did the job for like 6 months and was like, nah.
She was 2 years in. She went, oh, what does a girl have to do to get promoted around here? And everyone was like, do work.
Yeah. Louise Mensch, who's now a Sun columnist or a Mail columnist. She writes for one of those institutions.
I think it's the Sun.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's David Cameron's thing. And now I agreed with what he said, but I disagreed with what he didn't say. And
what did he not say?
So what I mean by that is he said that a lot of these institutions have got a bit racist.
He didn't quite say that.
He implied it, right?
What did he actually say?
He said that there aren't enough, say, black students at Oxford, which is not even near saying that Oxford is racist. It's just saying that there's not enough successful applications from black students.
For that bit, yes. But there was another bit where we were talking about crime and if you're black, you're much more likely to go to prison. And there is a belief, and he is getting one of a Labour MP to investigate whether or not there is unfair treatment of black criminals.
Because there is a much higher rate of, per capita of population, there's a higher rate of incarceration of all ethnic minorities, but particularly people of...
2.8% of the UK is black. 10% of prisoners are black.
Yeah. Unlike in the US, in the US there is evidence to show that people are put away for longer periods of time for doing the same crime if they are of a minority background. That study hasn't, as far as we know, that study
that
hasn't
is
been done
David
in the
Cameron's
UK,
asked,
which is what's been commissioned.
So I agree with everything he's saying. What I'm not happy with is the stuff he hasn't said about. So he hasn't come out. He talked about representation in Parliament, but what he didn't do is come out very clearly and say we have too many Oxbridge people, we have too many PPE, and we have too many public school MPs in the Conservative Party.
So what's wrong with people from Oxbridge running the country?
What's wrong with it?
Yeah, what's wrong with it?
Because they come from a very small select background, usually very wealthy, all knew each other at public school, all went to the same public schools, and what it means is you have a very tiny percentage, a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of people running the country and then judging people and setting laws to people that are wholly unrepresentative of the rest.
So a lot of people use this as an example for the policies that the current Conservative government are doing in terms of cuts for cuts' sake. So it would be very possible for us to be able to run the economy and still have a lot of have the welfare state in a way that it has traditionally
been.
So
I disagree that they're cuts for cuts' sake.
But that's an argument that a lot of people have made. And there's lack of understanding of how it impacts individuals and that kind of thing.
Well, look at the tax credits.
Yeah.
Right? The thing that George Osborne was doing before. This is a perfect example. That was an ideological decision. It didn't matter how badly it impacted people. George Osborne and his little crew of people that supported him wanted to cut that money without realising the horrific damage it would do to people's lives. He has no idea.
Osborne's, in my opinion at least, is a pretty sharp operator. And he's also of the school of thought that actually politicians should be professionals. That it should be something that the most, you know, the most talented people in the country go to, like, whether you think Oxbridge has the most talented people.
Right, so
he's very much the opposite view from yours. He doesn't really have a problem with the professionalisation of politics, which is kind of what you're talking about, roughly, isn't it?
Slightly. I mean, if you look at the route they've all gone through, they all go to the researchers, or they go to the communications...
Or political aid.
Political aid or whatever. And they get all these things through connections. Very hard to get into these things without good connections that come from family and wealth and background. And
the ability to move down to London and work for, like, £12,000 a year as an aide to an MP and live in Mummy and Daddy's mansion is a lot easier than if you're...
Jazz and I were talking about this on the way over, that the same problem is coming through in the arts as well that we have. And if people want to go and work at these fantastic companies, you want to get on and you've got to go and do an internship. If you want to be a musician, you've got to come down here and work for nothing. You want to be an artist, you've got to go to these schools, are very expensive. And if you are a regular Joe or a regular Jane, you don't have an empty house to go and live in for 6 months that some relative has offered up to you to go and live while they're off skiing somewhere. So you can stay and play around, do your arts, or go and do your internships. And you end up crushing that social mobility because there is no way for people to come in and do things.
So in the case of politics, what's your solution or proposed solution to have fewer people from Oxbridge proportionally becoming top-ranking politicians?
Well, there are plenty of people in the parties who want to come through who are not from those backgrounds. What there has to be a more welcoming route through for people to apply. So I've applied to...
What do you think that would look like?
Right.
Like open primaries, like in the US? And that's been suggested for the Labour Party as well.
They do open primaries on occasion. Mm-hmm. What you end up with, it's very difficult. In some way, you maybe need to mentor people through and support people through to do it. Because if you have an open primary, you have four people in the room and they're giving debates and presentations and everything else. And I guarantee the public school guy will win every time. Because that person's been doing it since they're 7 years old. They've been prepping their presentations. They've been doing public schools. They were in the debating society. No doubt they're part of the thespian society and they've been on stage and everything else. And then you've got this other guy on the left or this girl on the left who might have come from a comprehensive school, actually very smart, represents the area, understands what people need, can articulate themselves, but they haven't had that stand-up presence practice since they were small, and so they get to that primary and they get knocked out of the water by the person who is super articulate and everything else, and the chairman knows, and chairman knows he's a good lad and he'll stick to the policies and everything else. That's not just a Conservative problem, right? Every party has this problem. To be fair to the SNP and UKIP, maybe not quite so much because of their...
The SNP has been amazing in terms of the diversity of candidates that they've put forward. You've got Murray Black on one end and...
Murray Black, who talks about... She doesn't like professional politicians and is a never...
And is now going to become a professional politician. But good on her, because I'm really happy for us to have, like, 20-year-olds in Parliament. I think that she's incredibly articulate. Like, people who are like her, who are incredibly well-informed and incredibly articulate when they...
So she's done very well, but she's also... she doesn't really know what she's talking much about. She might be very bright, but she's never worked a day in her life. I find it exceptionally...
You could say the very same thing about David Cameron, who's never had a real job.
I would agree with that too.
Yeah, I love that we have
basically just agreed that Murray Black's only as bad as Cameron in terms of being a...
Exactly, I can't...
That's not a strong defence.
If they are, neither of them have been professionals and gone and done proper jobs. And I can't say it's wrong for Murray Black to do that and say it's okay for David Cameron. I find it fundamentally wrong that people are able to go through the political system through connections and background and everything else. I mean, the subject we were talking about here, this is the point, this is why I get really, really animated about this point, is that David Cameron sat there saying, so the universities, you've got to take more black people and from other backgrounds that might have been poor and not had the opportunities earlier on, when at the same time they're going through the routes that are unavailable to everyone else to go and become an MP or something else. Mm-hmm. And if they don't... I've not seen an offered solution in that letter from David Cameron. I've seen a complaint about it, I've not seen a solution. And until David Cameron becomes a champion of changing that diversity, the first thing he can do to become that champion is make sure representation in the Conservative Party for candidates is significantly improved, and he puts his money where his mouth is and makes that change.
What's your... You haven't really given me, like, a solution to this, though,
Cameron, in his letter, actually ruled out the things like positive discrimination and quotas and that sort of thing. But it's pretty hard to say, if you take the debate example that you had, how somebody who's privately educated and, you know, has gone through all that preparation, has all that money, connections behind them, will not always win against somebody mm-hmm. who doesn't have those advantages, assuming that the other variables are held constant.
Yeah, so there's a few things you could do. There's the, do you know the Teach First organisation?
Yeah,
sure, and we talked about this earlier on. I don't know exactly how they do it, but they have done it very effectively. And there was someone in the Times, a columnist, she wrote about it, and it was, you know, I have to go and dig it up, and if I find it, I'll let you know.
Thank you so much. We'll put it, yeah.
And what they did was they basically had a sort of a blind application process where you couldn't see the university or school they had gone to. And it meant that people wouldn't, instead of, so you get a letter, application letter, I went to Cambridge. Oh, yeah, let's take the Cambridge person. Mm-hmm. Or someone else has written their CV and goes, I went to Wolverhampton University, is why I'm choosing it.
Oh, you poor thing.
And they could have read through the whole CV and gone, this person's really good. But they could have seen Wolverhampton and gone, no, that's not a good university.
So I did show my grievances of this, because if you go to a good university, the reason that you go to a good university, arguably, is so that you can get considered for better jobs. Right, that, like, there's an issue there when if somebody has, through meritocracy, managed to get into a good uni and gotten a good grade,
yep,
and worked really hard, why shouldn't they be rewarded for
so
that? I'm sounding like I'm more right-wing than you. It's terrifying.
And I don't completely disagree with that. There should be that meritocracy to work through. But the point I say to people is that not every single top aspect of our society and jobs and workers and MPs should be selected from such a tiny group of area where I went to preschool, I went to prep school, I went to a very posh Eton public school, and everything was building towards getting to Cambridge and Oxford and getting there, and everything was designed the whole way through. Whereas if you've got someone who could have worked very hard with no support at home because their parents were off working, or maybe there was a single parent family, they've got themselves to comprehensive, they've got themselves to a half decent university, they've studied, they've had success in other things as well, but those things are not what should be part of the journey for who we want. We are choosing people, not qualifications.
Yeah. And what do you think, Jimmy? Because you hate diversity.
So not
by the way, I think this is an exceptionally difficult problem to solve. It's mm-hmm. not easy.
Well, the thing that strikes me, this is even taken as read that diverse organisations are more effective than non-diverse ones, which I actually don't think is necessarily can be taken as read. But assume that that is the case, it strikes me that if you've got a meritocratic system such as the one you're proposing, it's pretty much impossible to create a system that cannot be gained in some way by mm-hmm. people that have more money, which is effectively the point I said earlier. But if you have more money and you have connections and you have like a stable background, family background, you will just do better at all the other things that somebody else can do better at.
Yep.
And the thing about the blind application thing probably has some play, and maybe it's also a cultural thing within, just to take politics as an example, that you want to actually look for candidates from a broader range of experiences. But to actually change that culturally within inside any organisation is very, very hard.
I agree.
And it would probably have to be led by someone who didn't go to Eton.
Which is very hard when 50% of
which happens. Which is why, and I'll be honest, and a lot of people will shout at me for this when I say it, I am pro Michael Gove. Michael Gove said this to David Cameron in a cabinet meeting.
Govey.
I love Gove, right? Gove says there's one main effort is to eliminate poverty in Britain. Everything he does is a fundamental rule.
Because he himself is from, like, he's adopted and he's from a working class family in the north, mm-hmm. right? Like, he is an unconventional Tory.
He is.
I quite like Gove, actually. I think there's a lot more to him than there are other Conservative politicians.
He was making hard decisions, right, that other people were not willing to do. Fighting a very left-wing organisation in the National Union of Teachers and everything else, of course they're going to criticise everything he does.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying everything he did was perfect. But this is the thing. This is why I like him. People might not necessarily agree with everything he tries to do, but the fundamental thing of what he's trying to achieve is make Britain a fairer society, and we need more people like that. The fact that David Cameron told him off in a cabinet meeting for what he pointed out, that all he was there with his buddies from that photo in the
mm-hmm. Bullingdon Club,
right? Which just shows,
which we're not allowed to publish anymore.
But just look, this is the perfect picture. There's four of them from the Bullingdon Club at the same time. They're all mates, and they're all leading the Conservative Party. How on earth can you not sit there and see that? Do you know Max Hastings, the author? Do you see the thing where he wrote in the Times about 2 weeks ago? He did an interview talking about Syria bombing and everything. Mm-hmm. I love Max Hastings him to bits. He's brilliant. The stuff he writes, he's so intelligent. He said before David Cameron got elected, I never would have seen another Etonian or a public school could have ever become leader of the Conservative Party again.
Mm-hmm.
Then they chose David Cameron, and George Osborne's probably going to take over, or Boris Johnson. And he sits there looking at it and he says, we have a real problem with the society in this way, that people are getting just cut out because of the school they went to.
Huge. We've run out of time. If you guys have any opinions on this, do you think that actually we shouldn't be caring about the fact that Eton have a lot of people in power?
That's a rather pointed look at me.
But leave us your opinions on Twitter. We're at Right Dishonor. Nick, where can people find you on the interwebs?
I think my Twitter.
Don't think too hard. Come on.
I think my Twitter is Sarnik, at Sarnik, but I don't really use Twitter very often.
As in TSAR. What's the best place that they can find you? Your HuffPo.
My HuffPo, Nicholas Massier, Huffington Post. Yes, you will see my blogs on there.
Excellent.
And you'll see my Twitter there as well.
Cool. You can find me at Jazza John, and you can find Jimmy at
JDE
Nichols. Also, subscribe to this podcast and. Leave some stars.
On iTunes.
Because that always helps us out. Thank you very much. Doodle.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.